Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 274 of the Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis here with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan. How are you?
I am excited because we are doing one of our very favorite things, and that is taking listener questions today. Yay!
Yay!
I can't believe how long it's been.
Like, I know. And
April.
It was April. I'm usually more on top of this, and we do it about every 3 months, and we usually do 2. And it's funny because it was really at the beginning of staying at home. And so some of the questions had to do with that. Some of them didn't. And now staying at home or having modified our lives is so like old news. I mean,
right,
we can talk about it, but it was interesting that most of these questions don't have anything to do with pandemic 2020.
We've all just readjusted how to live in these unprecedented times. And I think that also just like the passage of time has felt different. Everything has been, you know, what is time even, or time has no meaning, that joke that we've been making now for what, 6 months? It's just, I'm not surprised the time went by quickly and we misinterpreted how long it had been, but I'm excited because these really are some of our favorite episodes to do.
Yeah, they are. And we got some really great questions. We appreciate everybody who left us a voicemail. I did find it interesting that some parenting challenges just are the same, whether you're in a pandemic or not. I think some are exacerbated a little bit, but listening to these questions, you realize people are getting pregnant and having new babies. People are thinking about school. People are, it's like the parenting keeps on happening, and it has
it does.
Been, which shouldn't be surprising, but yeah.
Well, before we get to the questions, Sarah, we got the nicest message from a listener named Caitlin. And, you know, usually we don't necessarily play every message that we get that it's not a question. It's just kind of talking about this Mom Hour community and how during times of COVID, it's really hard to get out and meet new people and to even to socialize with the people who are already in your lives. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's like a nod to the community that we have around us, which of course is you and I, but also our Facebook community and just like the social media and also just podcasts in general.
Yes.
And so I think it would be kind of fun to play that before we go to break and then before we start answering questions. So here is our message from Caitlin.
Hi, Megan. Hi, Sarah. This is Caitlin from Corvallis, Oregon. I am a mom of one. Her name is Cambria and she is 19 months old. It's definitely been an interesting season going through quarantine, but it's been fantastic being able to look forward to your episodes every week. I am one of the binge listeners. We started listening to your podcast after I realized that I needed some mom advice and just kind of mom culture in my life now that we're stuck at home and I haven't been able to spend much time developing relationships with other moms, just because I'm the oldest in my family. I'm the first to have a baby in any of my friends or family. So it's been really nice listening to all of your older podcasts, and we're all caught up now. So now I have to wait every week to listen to new content, but that's okay because it gives me something to look forward to. We love listening to you guys and hearing all of your advice, and I've become a lot more confident as a mom after listening to you guys, and I almost feel, you know, kind of like we're friends. So thanks so much for putting out content every week and giving me something to look forward to.
Caitlin, that really made our day. And I do think it's very normal to feel like the podcast hosts you listen to are your friends. And I think I can relate to that as a podcast listener. So just know, Caitlin, that there's, you know, thousands of other moms who, you know, are listening to podcasts, and not just our podcast, but other podcasts. And we are all kind of connected. I know that sounds a little woo-woo and weird, but I appreciate that message and just grateful for our community. So
very much.
Well, let's take a break and then dive into some listener questions when we come back.
Sarah, we've been hearing from listeners that as this pandemic stretches on, some of our family's healthier habits have kind of slipped by the wayside. I know that's true for me. Moms and dads everywhere are doing their best, but like, these are unprecedented times and it's not easy. Our sponsor, Hiya Health, can help ease your mind a bit if your kids aren't getting quite the balanced diet you wish they were. They make vitamins for kids of all ages that are specifically designed to fill the most common nutrient gaps in a modern kid's diet.
So apparently 93% of kids don't eat enough fruits and vegetables, but I can tell you with certainty that 100% of the kids in my house do not eat enough fruits and vegetables. And the two dads who founded Hiya really looked at the updated science around what kids need. So their chewables are completely different from the kind of junky ones we might have grown up with. They ditched the chemicals and the added sugar, and they figured out how to blend 12 farm-fresh fruits and vegetables with 15 essential vitamins and minerals that are known to help support a healthy immune system, energy levels, brain function, mood, teeth, bones, and more, all into a yummy chewable that actually tastes great. I tried it.
Yeah, that is amazing. Hiya vitamins are also non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, and nut-free, and they're manufactured in the USA with globally sourced ingredients that are chosen for optimal bioavailability and absorption. But the kids don't care so much about that. They just love the super cute reusable bottles that they get to decorate with stickers.
Well, we've worked out an exclusive offer with Hiya Health just for listeners of the Mom Hour. We're going to help you get 50% off your first order, half off. To claim this deal, go to HiyaHealth.com/MomHour or enter code MomHour and you'll see that full discount applied at checkout. That's HiyaHealth, HiyaHealth.com/MomHour to save 50% on your first order of kids' vitamins.
Sarah, if there is one common theme we've all been living with for a while now, it's uncertainty. Like right now, a lot of families are heading back to school, but most of us still aren't 100% sure how the school year is going to play out. And as we talked about a lot, when everything feels so up in the air, I tend to gravitate toward those little things I can count on. And right now, putting structure around getting dinner on the table is one of those things. That's why I'm so grateful for our longtime sponsor, PrepDish.
Oh, me too. PrepDish makes it easy to meal plan even when your routines are in flux and things are uncertain. Because the founder, Allison, provides an entire week's menu along with a shopping list. It comes to your email on Fridays, right before the weekend when you might be prepping and shopping anyway. So then you do all the prep at once and you've got four dinners, a snack, and a dessert ready to pull out of the fridge anytime during the week, which is so helpful when you're, you know, trying to learn how hybrid schooling works or help your kids adjust to virtual learning or any one of the many possible realities moms are dealing with right now.
Yeah, with so many things brand new to us or still kind of up in the air, there's just nothing better than feeling good about the meal you put on the table without actually having to do the additional mental labor of planning and prepping every day. It's also a great way to try out new recipes without having to think too hard. So I'm looking at the keto menu for the week we're recording and hello, mushroom shallot turkey burger with roasted asparagus. I can't wait to impress the kids when they think I came up with that on my own.
Oh my gosh, that does sound so good. And your secret is safe with me, Megan. Allison always sends tips and substitution ideas in the email with the recipes too, which is really helpful right now if you can't always get your hands on certain ingredients. When you sign up for your free two-week trial for PrepDish, you'll get to choose from gluten-free, paleo, and super fast meal plans. So why not give it a try? To get your free two-week trial, go to PrepDish.com/TheMomHour to sign up. Again, it's PrepDish.com/TheMomHour for your first 2 weeks free.
Okay, so our first question came by email from Victoria, and I will just go ahead and read that. This question is regarding Sarah and her recent relocation. I am just curious how you are dealing with losing your people, as you mentioned in the episode that aired today. So that would have been, when would that have been, Sarah?
Like a month ago when we talked about moving. Ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We are considering a move about 2 hours away from our current location, closer to family in a way, but knowing no one else. I am having a hard time pulling the trigger. I have one school-age daughter who has herself a few besties, she's 8, a small smattering of friends, and a house we built. We are looking for a change for a number of reasons. However, I have dug my way into having a school network, a neighbor network, etc. Just know what I'm super close to. Any advice for me? I'm curious to follow your journey of rebuilding your network for yourself and for your kids. Sarah, well, do you want to take that one first?
Yeah, thank you, Victoria. I have to say, we got a lot of feedback and questions after the moving episode, which surprised me because it's a very specific life change. Like, not everyone out there is moving, but it sounds like a lot of you are considering moves. And I know COVID has contributed to that or made us all think differently about where we live and work. I love this question. And to back up, I did say when I announced my family's move last month, I did refer to having being really dialed into schools and community when we lived in Orange County. And then I moved to my hometown. So I am deeply connected to this place. Like I drive by places that I lived when I was a kid. And like, you know how that is, Megan, because you've moved all around and you've bounced back to places where you lived when you were younger. And it's a really powerful experience to be that connected to a place. However, I am not dialed in at all to the parenting, family, and school community here. There's a few people I know from high school who've moved back. But like, even then, your kids aren't exactly the same age or you're not at the same school. And now my kids are starting school in a pandemic virtually. So that's kind of the background of what I mentioned that we were leaving behind and that I was moving into. So I guess a couple of things. I am looking forward to establishing that sense of community here. I do think it will take a while in a pandemic. But my kids are a little bit older. So I guess I feel a little more of a sense of general confidence about how school communities work and how it is I'll meet people. And I know it'll happen. The flip side of that, I also didn't have super duper close bestie friends in my town where we left. So I'm not actually leaving behind any close friends. And it sounds like, Victoria, that's your situation as well. My closest friends, actually, like the way I'm connected to my very closest friends right now is a Voxer group, and it's three of us and they're high school besties. And we talk on Voxer, like, I mean, almost every day or every other day. And when I go on my walk, I listen to their messages. So the part of my friendship, like feeding my soul, that's at that deep connection level is already happening virtually. So that didn't change. The part that needs to kind of be replaced is more of the acquaintance network. And I do really look forward to that. I had it really, really good in Orange County. I had like 10 neighbors, like my neighbor network was incredible. And then schools, and just knowing people at schools. And I am someone who derives a lot of security and comfort by just having a wide array of acquaintances. I don't really need those acquaintances to also be people I hang out with in person, but that's such a unique personality thing. I'm happy having a lot of my connections be virtual. And then I just like to know, I like to see familiar faces when I'm at the grocery store, when I'm at school. I like to feel like I know who's around me in my town, but I don't need to have coffee with them. So I feel like, I don't even know if that answered her question, except that everyone's a little bit different. And there are some things that will take a while to rebuild here, but other than my sweet neighbor friends and stuff, I didn't feel like I was giving up that much for what I was gaining. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I think you're right that it is a personality thing, because you would think I am an extrovert and you would think that means I'm a total social butterfly and want to know. But there's a lot about that that makes me kind of uncomfortable. Strangely, like I like to have people, like a very small group of people who I hang out with all the time. Like you are just my constant people. And I get almost flustered when I have too many relationships that I'm trying to balance, because I think I try to go in too deep on all of them. And
well,
then I can't.
That's an Enneagram 2 thing, don't you think? Like you want to be, you want to serve those relationships at the deepest
right.
level, probably.
So it becomes overwhelming. So I think it's just, I think you're right. With an older kid like that, like you will start to find ways to rebuild that network. And I just think it's so funny. Like I've lived here for 12 years and I'm very fortunate that my two, you know, high school best friends live in the same town as me. So for like the first 6 years I was here, that was all I needed and all I got. And it would now, if you look around, it kind of looks like I slowly built this huge network of friends over 12 years. But actually when I made up my mind to do it, it happened in like a year. So, it's sometimes where you are in life dictates the limits of your friendships more than the length of time you've been someplace. Mm-hmm. Because if you find your people, you could have that really strong network within a few months if you really wanted to and were willing to put the time in. But I just think it does depend. Yeah, it just kind of depends on how you do friends. And I don't think it takes a while to figure that out about yourself. And a move is like a really interesting way. Like, Sarah, you talking about how you're getting certain needs met through your Voxer group and other needs you will be met eventually through these other ways. Like, sometimes it takes like a few moves or like readjustments to even figure that out about yourself and how you prefer to do it. So I would look at it as like an opportunity to do it the way you want to do it this time.
Yeah. And I also think with an 8-year-old, and I don't know if Victoria has other children, but she has one school age daughter. I also think the time it takes to learn how to get into a school community, for example, the first time is more of an uphill, like the learning curve is steeper the first time. And I think that's what I meant when I said, I've done this a couple times now. And like, I know how to make nice with the moms in the pickup line. And I know like that there will be one or two that I really maybe want to get together with outside of, but that I, you know, that the rest will just be friendly faces. And so it will be easier the second time is one thing I was going to say. And Megan, I was thinking about you and what you just said, and probably you didn't really want or need much beyond Jenna and Missy when you still had little kids at home. And then school full time. That was when you worked for the radio station and you were like out in your town a little bit more. So also remember that these things change as your kids get older, and you may want more, or you may want less. Like sometimes we need to be out at playgroups and library and everything when the kids are little, because we need that social interaction. But you may find the opposite. You may find that you hunkered down when your kids were little and then you're ready to get out there. So things will change. I also think a move could be an opportunity for sure.
And I just assumed that the 8-year-old was, you know, the Victoria's only child. So I'm just going to go on that assumption. And say that I think to what started to happen for me around the time my younger kids got around that age is that school became way less important to me as a way of meeting other parents. Mm-hmm. And that felt very important when they were really little. But I would say like later elementary, almost none of the people who are in my close network are people. So now we live in a small town, so often they happen to have kids who go to my kids' schools, but that's not how we met, or that's not why we started hanging out. And the older your child gets and the more independent they are and the less you care, I guess, about it just feels like you start to kind of remove yourself from needing that to be your social, I don't know, not even an outlet, but just the mechanism that gets the wheels turning. That starts to change, or at least did for me. And I found that it was outside hobbies, jobs.
Which you wouldn't have had time for, by the way. Like outside hobbies you don't have time for when your kids are younger.
So things will continue to change. And I think it's exciting.
Yeah, agreed. Well, keep us posted, Victoria, if you decide to make that move. And and thanks everybody who's said very nice things about my move and wanted to follow along. And I think moving is something that's kind of fun to vicariously. If you are... staying in one place, it's fun to follow a move. So I will keep updating too. Okay, we have a question from Danny about potentially adding a third baby, which I would like to go on record and saying that is the most popular question that we get asked.
Yes.
Is specifically about adding a third baby.
Yep.
It comes in different forms, but that is the number one question we get. So Danny's has a specific twist to it. So let's listen to her now.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. This is Danny. I am in Houston, Texas, and I am a mom of a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And I just wanted to get y'all's opinion on, if we're thinking about having a third kid, please give me some encouragement and tell me that my older two would play with and entertain each other so that I could focus on a baby. I'm having a hard time right now trying to still play with and entertain my 3-year-old when the 1-year-old still needs me. And I'm just really looking forward to the time when they might play together. So I'd love some encouragement. Thanks and love you guys.
Okay, Danny, thanks for the question. I always love, by the way, answering questions about like whether or not to add a specific baby. And you're right, Sarah, it's typically the third, because I feel like that's when like stuff gets real. Because, you know, any old person we'll have two kids, but then having a third is like a statement. Like you're really going all in on this baby thing, and it does feel like huge in so many ways. And, you know, the odd numbers and all that stuff. So I guess the first thing I would say, and, you know, I know Sarah is going to speak to how this is all just a big crapshoot and like, we just don't know, but I would just say, having had several sets of 1 and 3-year-olds, I don't know that you can judge or, predict how that specific set of kids will play together when they're 2 and 4 or 3 and 5. Like in my experience, 1 and 3-year-olds rarely do anything that actually looks like playing together. They might, you know, what do they call it? Parallel play. They might play in the same room. They might yank toys away from each other. They might knock each other over, but like it doesn't ever look like playing the way you want your siblings to play. to in my house, that started happening around 2 and 4, 3 and 5. Mm-hmm. It just got better and better as it went on. So like, Sarah, I know that you're going to kind of like speak to this whole you just don't know thing, but I think that's a big part of it, because at the ages they are now, I wouldn't get too down on the fact that they aren't. Yeah. Or, you know, like, because I don't think that age group really does.
Yeah, in general, no, that would be hard. Well, that kind of like teased me up perfectly, because what I was going to say, and I relate to this, when you're thinking about adding another baby, your mind automatically does this thing where you picture, what if I had a newborn right now?
Right
now.
My life
right now includes these like basically two young toddlers who aren't independent at all, who can't play, who can't amuse themselves while I like refill a cup of coffee or take a shower. How would I deal with a newborn right now? Well, good news, biology and the way things work means that you, unless you're, you know, fostering or adopting tonight, you would have to grow a baby for 9 months. It takes yeah. a little while to get pregnant. So picture like a year. So if you think of like, how old will the siblings be a year from now? In your case, maybe it's 2 and 4. And then also picture what your life was like a year ago. So 12 months ago, and think how much things have changed in those last 12 months. And remember that it will change again that much or more in the next 12 months. And maybe it'll take you a while to get pregnant. We're actually talking about like 18 months to 2 years in the future. And then it's like, you're not having a baby today. You're having a baby potentially in a future scenario where your children are possibly twice their age. So just like, just, I know it's all like kind of obvious when you lay it out like that, but it's so easy to only know our current reality and forget mm-hmm. that things change so much. And the other thing, just to like build that out a little farther, when my third was born, my older ones were 2 and 4, on the older edges of 2 and 4, like 2.5 and almost 5, but they were 2 and 4. Pretty soon they were 3 and 5. And by the time I had like a wild ultraviolet toddler running around, they were 4 and 6. They were in preschool and elementary school. So it's also like they didn't stay 2 and 4. They
right.
eventually, even though that was hard to have a newborn, a 2 and a 4 was hard. That didn't last forever. Like pretty right. soon I had an 18 month, a 4 and a 6 year old, and you know, things felt different. And the 4 and the 6, if we circle back to playing together, by then the older two really did play together. And so there's just, you have a lot of, there's a lot going on here that will evolve over time. And then I guess just finally on the note of playing together while you are with a baby, I just don't think, I think you don't know. Even if you, yeah. even if it is a year or two from now, I've had sibling pairs who play really well together, and I've had others who do not, like Reed and Violet did not at those younger ages, but now at 10 and 7, they play together all the time. So
yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily a reason to have a baby or not have a baby, because I don't think you can bank, you can't bank on those two, you know, being like a, like an awesome sibling pair who plays for hours. They might be, they might not be. I'm not sure it's the deciding factor. I'm not sure for me it would be the deciding factor in going for a third, because you just don't know.
Yeah. Well, and that, and to your other point, even if they don't play together, they'll both be better at playing by themselves by then. Like yeah. they'll both, and you might find that one of them is really drawn to the baby and wants yep. to be like the baby's shadow, which is helpful in a totally different way. So yeah, yeah. you just don't know. When you're saying that, Sarah, about, you know, how they don't stay newborns forever. I mean, that was one of the things I used to say all the time when people would be like, how can you have 5 kids? And I'm like, well, it's not like having 5 newborns.
Right.
Like all the other ones are getting older as yeah. the newer ones are coming along. It's not like having 5. I didn't have Quince. There's not like 5 right. toddlers running around. And I had this memory one time of babysitting my nephew, Jack, he's about 6 months older than Owen, I think 6 or 7 months older. And so it was like, Will was, I don't know, like, I feel like they were like, he was just starting to be mobile. Owen was a straight up, or no, sorry, Jack was the older one. So he was like in the middle, and Owen was still kind of like a babe in arms. But then mm-hmm. we had this like toddler we were babysitting, and then William was running around and he was like 3. And I said something like, can you imagine if we had another kid, how terrible it would be? And then I thought, oh, but like, short of fostering or adopting, there's literally yeah. no way I could have yeah. another kid. Like, there's no way to have 2 kids 6 months apart unless you right. do it on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so, like, of course that would be really hard. But even if they were a year apart, it would have been different. So, yes, like that, the spacing makes a difference. And right now, as you wait for this episode to come out, your spacing is already getting longer. Like, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it continues yeah. down that path. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. Well, I think we've inadvertently encouraged a lot of people to add babies to their families. Yes. Or maybe that's not. All right. We may have scared others away from it, but it feels like you guys like to tell us when we like inspired you to have a third kid. So maybe in Danny's case we have, or maybe not. All right. Well, let's take a break, and then we've got two more good listener questions when we come back.
Sarah, I know we are both huge fans of our sponsor, Dermatology, and we've been using their products for several months now. I have to say, I have felt great about going barefaced with almost no makeup most of the summer, and I feel like their self-care starter kit is the hero that's made it possible.
Oh my gosh, I totally agree with that. Well, you know I'm an evangelist for the retinol complex, and you and I both love the needleless serum and the sunscreen too. And the self-care kit that Dermatology put together just for our listeners makes it so easy to get started with, you know, what we like to call grown-up skincare. I didn't know how to use any of these products before we got started a few months ago. It comes with four full-size products, a cleanser, a serum, a sunscreen, and a retinol complex, and then they're all designed to be used together. Dermatology has marked the package all the way down to $99 with free shipping just for our listeners, which is a really great deal, especially for these kind of high quality products.
I have been using their sunscreen like crazy. It's really light and smooth, not like gunky or greasy like a lot of sunscreens are. And it's just really hard to find SPF 45 in a sunscreen that's meant for your face in general. So I use it a lot. And these days, it's actually often all I've got on my face during the day. So I'm really grateful that it doesn't get streaky. It doesn't smell weird. And it gives my skin long-lasting protection from the sun.
So again, it's $99 for a cleanser, that sunscreen, an anti-aging serum, and a retinol complex, all of which adds up to $175 normally, and then free shipping on top of that. Head to themomhour.com/skincare, and it's super easy to order the bundle right from there. Again, themomhour.com/skincare will take you right to Dermatology's special offer for our listeners. Check it out.
Sarah, I know you always say you're kind of illiterate in matters of pop culture, but I bet you still love a good game of trivia, right?
Oh, I totally do. And I'm actually great with some kinds of trivia, celebrities, TV. Just don't ask me about music.
Okay, well, fair enough. Well, with our sponsor, Trivia Star, you can just skip that category and feel like a winner with the ones that you do know. Trivia Star is a free mobile quiz app that's really fun and a great way to fire up all that knowledge you've still got in your brain somewhere. Probably only from the pre-kid days, if we're being honest, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, Trivia Star has categories like Disney and animated movies, so actually, it's possible that Mom Life will help you in this game. My kids and I played a few rounds together, and they loved it. Who doesn't like acing a quiz and, like, leveling up, right? There are over 60 categories to choose from, like music, sports, movies, TV, animals, celebrities, and the questions get harder over time, so you can kind of flex those trivia muscles as you play.
Trivia Star has 2,000 five-star reviews in the Apple Store, and if you download and start playing right now, you'll get 2,500 coins and 500 gems. Those help you advance if you get stuck on a hard level, so that's really handy. Go to the Apple or Google Store and search for Trivia Star. Again, it's free to download, and you'll get 2,500 coins and 500 gems when you search Trivia Star and download it today. Check it out.
Okay, we're back, and our next question comes from Anna, who got a surprise question when she wasn't expecting it from her 8-year-old. So let's hear Anna's question.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. My name is Anna, and I live in Indiana. I have 3 children, a son who is 11, and 2 daughters who are 8 and 5. A couple of weeks ago, I was outside with the children and my mom, and my 8-year-old daughter blurts out, "Mom, what's a period?" And I have to admit, it threw me a little bit off guard. I wasn't expecting the question. And I knew this would be something that I would need to discuss with her and start talking about. But I guess I just wasn't really prepared for it at the time. And I told her that we would talk about it later on when we had a little bit more privacy. So I know both of you have daughters who are a little bit older. And I was just curious to know at what age you started talking to them about these topics, and if you had any suggestions or advice on how to discuss the topics of puberty and sex in an age-appropriate way, or if you had any resources that you found helpful in facilitating those discussions. Thanks so much. I love your show.
Okay, Anna, good question. Clara is 11. So she's got the benefit of having several older female cousins and then those older cousins' friends who are kind of around, and she spends time with them, and she's seen the developing happening around her. There's a lot of chatter around that. So I would say that with Clara, as with the boys, although it's different because I have actually gone through the things that Clara is facing, right? it's just kind of this matter of fact conversation. We just talk about BO and armpit hair and like periods, and we talk about it casually and with humor and try to really I felt like as a kid, those topics were very like high up on a shelf. Like they mm-hmm. felt like a big deal. And I didn't want to feel like that with her because I don't want her to have to come to me with an awkward question when it's an emergency. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So that's kind of how we handle it. But I also think it's okay not to know how to answer a question in the moment. Like yeah. I do that all the time. I put stuff off all the time. Like you can't always be prepared to answer every single question at any moment of any day at all times, you know? So like, I don't think you did the wrong thing at all. Just saying, you know, let's talk about that a little bit later when we have time or privacy or what. I can think about my answer because
yeah.
you're going to get hit with a lot of humdingers. About very private things.
Yes, so. Agreed. And when I re-listened to Katie's question, I realized her mother was also there. So grandma was also there.
Yeah.
And then the siblings. So to be put on the spot, I want to emphasize what you just said, which is you didn't do anything wrong. There's no like A+ in talking to kids about puberty and tough topics.
And you didn't miss the moment because there's going to be a lot of those moments. Yeah.
And I
had forgotten that too. I would not want to have that conversation in front of grandma either. You know? So,
yeah. You feel like any other adult listening to how you are going to take that question, you feel a little bit like you're on stage and it's awkward enough. So just validating that, like, you totally did an okay thing, which is to say, hey, let's talk about this later. I think 8 is a great age to start talking about that because as we know, like, developing in girls can start even if it's not your daughter, but her friends and people she sees, you know, 8, 9, 10 for sure. So I think that's a great age. I don't think there's anything that's too young. But I will say that when a kid surprises you with a question like that, it's great to get clarity on what prompted the question before you launch into providing every detail.
They might not want that.
Well, and they might not even know exactly what they're asking. So right. I have a funny side story, and this didn't happen to anyone in my family. It was like a friend of a friend a long time ago, but her very young child asked she was trying to ask what a version of a song was. Like, you know how you hear a different version of a song, but that also sounds like a term for an unmarried woman, perhaps. You know what I'm talking about. And so her mom launched into like the Virgin Mary and a whole biological definition of that word, only to find out that her daughter was asking, what does the word version mean? Like, I heard a different version of that song.
That is hilarious.
Is that awesome? So, and I'm not saying your daughter didn't actually want to know what a period was, but when they prompt you with a question, it's totally an opportunity to be like, tell me more about that. Tell me more about where you heard that word or what kind of questions do you have for me?
Period has several meanings too. And if
it's also the end of a sentence.
Your daughter could be like, wait, what? What did I just get myself into?
Exactly. So a little probing question in return or finding out what they're curious about. And then answering as simply as you can, and you're not doing it wrong. You just do your best. Then you go back and you Google it and you read a few books and you try again. A couple more specific things. In our family, we talk a lot about science and biology because we're kind of nerdy. And Brian, my husband, really loves science and my kids love animals. So I have found inroads in talking about bodies and bodily functions. And like, if you think about like animals mating and how like reptiles have eggs and mammals give live birth. And like you see like pictures of kittens nursing and like there's a lot of biology that happens in the animal world that I have found inroads to talking about like human biology and reproduction and things like that. Just one easier way when all the kids are around and we're talking about like, you know, puppies or cows drinking milk or whatever. It just has felt like an easy inroad. Your pediatrician can also help. I know ours recommended one of the books, The Care and Keeping of You is a really popular one. I'll link that up in the show notes. There's a version one and version two for like younger tweens and then older tweens and teens. So you can always buy a book. And then the last thing I will say is some kids ask a lot of questions and some kids do not. And I actually, even though the question that you were given was at like a awkward time and you didn't feel like answering it, I've actually found it easier with the kids who ask a lot of questions.
Yes, I agree.
They're, there are kids who will not ask any questions. And unfortunately, it's still on us to make sure that they have safe and accurate information. And it's more, trust me, it's more awkward when they are
so much
not
harder
to
bring it
questions.
Up when they don't, when they're not yeah. initiating. I totally
and they
agree.
And they yeah. really don't initiate. Like, they really don't want to talk about it at all. Like, so they are not going to ask you questions. And quite yeah. frankly, it would be unsafe not to just ride that out and never talk about it. So you know, so maybe be glad that she asked a question at age 8. Yeah. I think that's a great age. And yeah. So anyway.
Yeah. And in our family, we had definitely had a couple non-question askers, and I would try to kind of use the question askers as a way to have the conversation with the non-question asker without,
yes, I've done that
without
too.
Putting them on the spot.
Yes.
And I think that that's kind of leads back to the only last point that I wanted to make, is that none of these are one and done conversations. Mm-hmm. These are, you know, now the Band-Aid has been ripped off and you're going to be having this conversation in many forms for the rest of your life. But, you know, for yeah. the next 10 years, it's some yeah. version of that. Of that conversation is going to happen again and again and again. And it does get easier. And I think the more you normalize it, and like, maybe next time you bring it up somehow, maybe you find a way to just like insert it into conversation or whatever, or I don't even know what it would be. You're at the store and you're in the menstrual aisle and
yeah,
like point some stuff out, like whatever that is. Those conversations keep happening. And the more they happen, the less awkward they become for everyone, including if you happen to have any of those kids in your family who listen but don't ask. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And so like yeah. the more you could talk about it, the better for everybody.
That's convenient for you having four boys in a row,
yes.
that you could just like create a little audience. The challenge uh-huh. I face right now with girl, boy, girl is there are some differences and
right.
the audience is mixed, which
yes.
isn't bad for a lot of things. And I'm not saying they need to be separated out for every conversation. I'm not saying that at all. But the older
but
they
some
get,
some of it, yes.
I yeah. don't have I don't have the questions that are being asked by one side are not what
the questions
the other side
that need to
needs
be answered
to hear.
For the
yeah.
other side. Yes,
exactly.
Got it.
Anna, you're doing a great job. None of us like this. This is not really that fun for any of us, I don't think. And it's worth muddling through anyway. So you're doing a great job. Should we move on?
Yeah.
All right. So our next question comes from Katie. And now I have the song Satisfied from Hamilton going through my head after we listen to Katie's question.
One minute.
Hey, Megan and Sarah, this is Katie. Do you have any advice for handling a kid who is never satisfied? We have three boys, ages 5, 3, and 3 months, and our oldest is super active. He always wants to be doing fun things. We write his ideas down and try to schedule them, but it's never enough. For example, we took him fishing this weekend, and before the day was done, he was complaining that it wasn't long enough and asking when we can go again. We also swam and got ice cream, so it's not like the day was short on fun. I know that one day his persistence will be one of his strengths, but right now, it's just nonstop, feels negative, and is driving us crazy. It's like it's never enough for him. Help. Thanks for your advice.
Okay, Katie, I will refrain from singing Hamilton, but I feel you on this. My first reaction here was this has to be so annoying and frustrating as a parent. I know I am very triggered when my kids feel somehow ungrateful or like we've just done some really fun thing and then they're like asking for the next fun thing. So I just, as a mom to mom, validate that this is, you know, really frustrating and annoying, which is why I think my advice would be to largely ignore a lot of it. Maybe not all of it, but like 80% of it, for a couple of reasons. Five is an age where he's able to anticipate the excitement of something really fun, like going to the arcade or getting ice cream or going, you know, on a vacation, because he remembers the last time he did those things. I know we've always laughed on this show, like until kids are 4 or 5, they don't remember last Christmas or last Halloween.
Right.
Like they don't remember their last birthday party. So it's like, we know they've had all this fun, but everything's new to them until they're about 5. And then they know how fun a birthday party is. They know how fun a roller coaster is, and they are able to look forward to those things and you know, anticipate, but they're not great at like delayed gratification yet. They don't have a great sense of time and they're impatient and impulsive. So it's kind of a perfect storm of like, yeah, he's wired to want the fun all of the time. And it might be uniquely his personality to really kind of jones over those experiences. But as a mom, I think you can largely just sort of separate yourself from that, because it sounds like you're doing a great job. I love that you said you're writing down what he wants to do. You're making sure he is satisfied. He does get to look forward to, you know, a trip to wherever and do it. And then when it starts feeling ungrateful, or it starts being like, what's next, what next, what's next, I think I would ignore that, honestly, because it's he's just not developmentally ready to like appreciate the fact that you went to all this work to have him have a really great day. And he will eventually outgrow that, I think. So it's almost like separating what's going on with him as a 5-year-old and what's going on with you being triggered by that as a mom, and ignore.
So I will agree with a caveat. Okay. I agree, though. It is like, this is a personality thing. Some, I believe they are called maximizers.
Okay.
There are people who want to get the maximum fun and the maximum like impact out of every situation that they're in. And sometimes that can be kind of paired with like a just in general, not even negative, but like just complaining nature or blurters. People like little kids who just say everything they think. And that can come out in a variety of ways. And sometimes it sounds like complaining. And I also just to totally like, validate Katie that it is so hard not to take it personally. Like you worked so hard to do this thing. And then this kid is just like ungrateful. And that's also a big trigger for me. Yeah. Just like with all things for kid, you know, grumpy kids or anything that is not about us, like we can't take it personally. Mm-hmm. But it's so hard not to take it personally. So I think that I would say at 5, I agree, largely ignore it. But I don't know that all kids outgrow that without some help, because I think there are kids, and I know some very, very close to me, who don't get over the opening their mouth and saying the thing and need to be coached. Like, and I think you can do it without like trying to talk them out of it. I think that's sometimes we're inclined to say like, what do you mean you're not happy? Like we're, like you said, like, we're so lucky. Remember we did this? Wait, this is, why aren't you enjoying yourself? Why don't you just enjoy yourself now instead of thinking about next? Like we almost want to like talk them out of their feelings, and that doesn't work. Agreed. I don't think. And it creates like this, like, I don't know, it gives it too much energy or something. Mm-hmm. And then it takes away your energy. But I do think it's okay. Maybe not at 5, but maybe soon after, to say something like, you know, Dad and I worked really hard to put this together, and it doesn't really seem like you're happy. And sometimes that's just kind of a bummer. And I don't think you need to make a big point about it, but I think pointing out that a kid's words, even at 5 or 6 or 7, have an impact. Maybe you can ignore it, but maybe grandma and grandpa can't. Like it's like, not just, you're not just doing this for you, but you're doing it for other people who are maybe going to try to please them in the future. And it's not like you're asking them to act or pretend. It's more just like, you know, sometimes the nice thing to do is take a moment to appreciate what you have going on instead of saying the thing on your mind about how you're unhappy. And I don't know exactly what age that starts. I think it depends a lot on the kid and the situation. Yeah. But I don't think all kids outgrow it. I think sometimes it's just like it's just in them to kind of be complainy, and they have to be shown that sometimes like the polite or kind or compassionate thing to do is to think the thing and let it go and not to just say it. Just because they can.
I love that. I think that is an important clarification for sure to what I said. And I agree. I think as kids get older, that thinking about others, that empathy muscle strengthens, and that's an important awareness to bring to them. So I totally agree with that. I wanted to share that something that Reed used to do that I think was like a part of anxiety was wasn't so much of not being satisfied, but if he'd had a really good experience, like let's say we went to like the arcade and we got ice cream after and we had like a really good day, he would want to repeat that to the letter, like almost an obsessive, would look forward to doing that exact same thing again. And we'd be like, but buddy, what if the next time we have a free Saturday, we do something else awesome? Like we go for a bike ride on the beach and we get pancakes. And it was like, no, I need to repeat that exact pleasure experience. So I just think it's interesting that kids are, especially at that age, like really learning to grapple with big desires, yeah. right? And like big like swings of like, oh my gosh, it was so fun. I need more. And I think you're right. There's a maximizer personality probably in there. And I love what you said about kind of coaching them to broaden their perspective a little bit as they get older.
Yeah. And I think a lot, it might be also an anxiety thing with that. And I'm thinking, I identify with the maximizing of almost like getting close to the end of one experience and wanting it to be done so I can get to the next one because there's like an anxiety around the fun ending. It's so weird.
Yeah.
I used to be that way with like Broadway shows, and not that I was seeing a lot of Broadway shows when I was a teenager, but if I saw like a musical, which is like one of my very favorite things to do, sometime in like toward the end of the second act, I would start to feel antsy for it to be over so that I didn't have to experience it ending. It's a really weird,
interesting.
I can't even describe exactly what the feeling was in me, but it was almost relief when it was done because then I could stop worrying about it being done and I could start thinking about the next one, which is, you know, I think I've kind of just gotten over it with age and like realizing that when one fun thing ends, there's always another fun thing coming, but it takes sometimes kids time to learn that in their bones. So,
I love that. The final thing I was going to say on this one is, anytime your kid is working on something like this, I think catching them in a good moment or catching them with some growth in that area and just praising or complimenting. We do this a lot in our family because my kids are all so different and they're all working on different things. But I will say something like, you know, Reed, I know it's really hard for you to be flexible when plans change and that's something you're working on. And you were so flexible today. And I appreciate that. And I would say that right in front of the girls who don't have a problem being flexible. And I'm not going to compliment them on that because they're not working on it. So everyone's kind of working on something else. So little opportunities to say, I know this is particularly hard for you because you are like a fun junkie. Don't say that to your kid, but like a fun, like you love the next fun thing. And today we couldn't get to the next fun thing and you rolled with it. So I really appreciate that. And that you can start doing, I think, at age 5. And it's just, you know, just little things, but appreciating when they're working on that hard stuff, I think goes a long way. So
yeah, agreed.
All right. Well,
did we solve it?
And we saw as usual, we've solved none of it. You guys are brave to allow us to dive into your parenting challenges. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And just a reminder to check out our sponsor Dermatology and that $99 skincare bundle that they are offering. Is a really good deal. It ships really fast, so it'll be on your door in a couple days, most likely, depending on where you live. And both Megan and I are using and loving these products like every day. So that is themomhour.com/skincare, or just look for the link right in the show notes on your phone, wherever you're listening right now.
Yeah, go check that out for sure. I love Dermatology's products. And we'll be back with you next Tuesday with another listener questions episode. Talk to you then.